Good morning. Today, March 3, Tuesday, let the record show that Representative Keller, Representative Cisna, Representative Munoz, and Bob Herron are here to start the CNRA meeting. Let the record show that we are on daylight savings time, and it is 9:03. Okay. We do have four bills on the packet today, and the first one we're going to bring up is our final look at House Bill 74, Coastal Management Program. It is the intent of the co-chairs to pass this bill out today. We're going to look at an amendment first, and I believe there is no testimony that we will take. So House Bill 74 is in front of us. For the purpose of the amendment, Madam Co-Chair.
Yes.
Excuse me. Let's take a moment here for something that's real important to myself personally, but especially Representative Keller. Representative Keller.
Yeah, a friend of mine he passed on last night. A friend of many years. And Kurt Menard last night died in his sleep.
Oh, no.
So if we could have a stand and have a moment of silence, it'd be great.
Yes.
Thank you. If you think of it, pray for Linda. She's back there. She got back last night, and I'm sure it's a hard time for the family and the community. So.
Thank you, Representative Keller. Representative Menard started his career in House Resources many, many years ago, and so it's most appropriate, sir. Thank you. Madam Co-Chair, if we, for discussion purposes, can you move
yes.
the amendment, please?
Yes. I'd like to move an amendment on page 7, line 21, replacing the word contemporary with scientific and deleting the word traditional.
Object.
Okay, object for the purposes of discussion.
And do you
yes.
want an explanation?
Yes, go
okay.
ahead, ma'am.
The amendment was offered by Representative Millett, and the reason being was that the terminology contemporary leaves a lot of opportunity for interpretation of what exactly contemporary means. It's not very well defined in the law or in practice. So we thought that we would go ahead and offer the amendment in her absence to help clarify the intent of this particular bill. And we feel that traditional covers, local knowledge covers traditional, local knowledge being traditional knowledge, very similar concepts, and scientific would incorporate areas of science and specific criteria that could be considered under this bill. So again, replacing contemporary with scientific and deleting the word traditional and including leaving local knowledge.
And for the record, the amendment is supported by Representative Jewell. Representative Sisna.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, I see two copies of another amendment. Or are there two amendments? I don't have a copy of that amendment.
Okay.
And is that page 7, line 21
yes,
that we're
ma'am.
Talking about?
Yes.
Yeah. I don't understand why this... You said local knowledge. This says contemporary with scientific.
Yes, and then we would, in the CS, there is behind contemporary, there is and traditional local knowledge. And the maker of the amendment and the sponsor of the bill have Representative Millett has introduced the amendment, and Representative Jewell has no objection and supports the amendment.
I'm having a serious problem here, because I see at page 7, line 21, replace contemporary with scientific. Is that what you said?
Yes, ma'am.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, and I thought you were saying traditional with... Well, am I not hearing correctly?
Please go ahead.
traditional would be removed, but local remains. Local and traditional are considered very similar.
Okay. Okay. I'm sorry. I'm not, yeah, I didn't see the entire in context. Thank you.
Right. So, again, for the record, the amendment would replace contemporary scientific, and we would delete the word traditional only.
Okay. And I remove my objection.
Okay. If there's no objection, we do have an amendment. Matt, Chris, for the record, we have to adopt the CS. Okay. Okay. Madam Co-Chair, could a motion, please?
Yes, I'd like to move for adoption CS for House Bill 74, the CNRA version 26-LS0322/E.
As amended?
As amended.
Okay. We have the bill in front of us. There is, we have no public testimony on this. Okay. Confirming that. Madam Co-Chair, move.
I'd like to move House Bill 74, the CS for House Bill 74, CNRA committee version with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note. Is there a fiscal note?
Yes, there is.
Yes, and the attached fiscal note.
Seeing no objection, the bill is moved from committee to the next committee of referral. Okay. Let's move on. Let's.
Where's everybody going?
Somehow, are we in a pause?
Let's just take an at ease. We'll take an at ease for a couple minutes to let the majority of the room clear out. Bring ahead to the next piece of legislation. We have both a bill, House Bill 19, and a resolution that we'd like to talk about today. And if it's okay with the committee, we'll take public testimony on either piece of legislation. But at this time, I'd welcome Representative Anna Fairclough and staff member Crystal Kieneman to the committee. Good morning. And please, if you could start with House Bill 19, and then we'll go from there.
Good morning. It's nice to be here. I appreciate us springing forward today to take a look at daylight savings time. Co-chairs Munoz and Heron, for the previous 2 years to this legislative session, members from my community have asked our office to take up the issue of daylight savings time. In their opinion, it's political time, and they would like to be off of political time. If I could, I'd like to turn the microphone over to my able aide to give a brief history so that we're in the same position before I tell you some of the issues that my community specifically brought forward and the responses that we've heard from a letter that we reached out into the state of Alaska.
Thank you. Good morning. For the record, my name is Crystal Kieneman, staff to Representative Fairclough. Just a brief history. Daylight savings started in World War I. It started in 1918 in order to conserve resources for the war, for the war effort. Congress placed the country on daylight savings time for 7 months, and in the end of 1918 to 1919. They ended up repealing it, however, because it was so unpopular. Next, during World War II, Congress enacted the Wartime Act on January 20th of 1942, which reinstated year-round daylight savings from until February 9th, 1942, as a measure to conserve energy, and it remained in effect until after the war. From 1945 to 1966, U.S. federal law did not address daylight savings time. So states and different localities were able to choose daylight saving whenever they wanted to or not. But most did observe it from the last Sunday in April until the last Sunday in September. During the 1950s, many states and localities in the northeastern U.S. Began extending daylight saving until the last Sunday in October. The absence of federal standardization resulted in patchwork, where some areas observed it and some adjacent states did not, which caused some trouble when it came to trains and just standard travel throughout that. In 1966, the Uniform Time Act was instated. It does not require states to observe daylight savings. It does state, however, if they are going to observe it, then it must be done uniformly. In response to the 1973 energy crisis, daylight savings time in the United States began earlier in both 1974 and 1975, commencing on the first Sunday in January, and then the last Sunday in February for 75. The extension of daylight savings time was not continued due to public opposition to the late sunrise times during the winter months. And in 76, they reverted back to the Uniform Time Act. The last change to daylight savings took place on March 11th of 2007, where it was extended another 4 to 5 weeks from the second Sunday of March to the first Sunday of November, and that's daylight savings in a nutshell.
Yes, ma'am.
Mr. Chairman, if I might continue, in 1983, if there are people listening, I just want to make sure that, so we have daylight savings time happening globally and nationally for the U.S., and in 1983, prior to that, we had five different time zones in Alaska. And in 83, we created an Alaska Standard Time that basically put most of the state, all but the Aleutian Chain, a remote area in the Aleutian Chain, to an Alaska time. So some parts of our state, when we go on and off daylight savings time, specifically the northern latitudes, are 3 hours off of their biological clocks. They are off of sun time. In Alaska, the land of the midnight sun, dusk and dawn really have no relevance in a great part of our state. And so specific to northern communities, they are off cycle all the time. And specific to interior and mid-latitudes, when we go on or off daylight savings time, really within a week, you're back to where the light would have been normally. It's just a function of how quickly and that we gain daylight and how quickly we lose daylight throughout our state, that the daylight savings time just doesn't do what it's intended to do on a national level. We reached out into a community, and I believe you have a copy of the letter, where we asked Alaskans to comment on this issue. What do you feel about it? And our purpose is to understand all of the different perspectives. A reappeal on daylight savings time has been tried multiple times since 1983, and it's been unsuccessful. So our office is trying to understand all of the points and be able to address those points before this legislative body. To that end, you should know we had 364 responses. 364 support responses. 264 of those responses to our email supported the repeal of daylight savings time. 68 opposed, 12 supported year-round staying on daylight savings time, 15 didn't care, and 5 preferred to be 3 hours off of the East Coast, so they wanted us to jump further ahead. I only share that because it's not a popularity vote. We really need to do we need to make a decision that's good for all of Alaskans. And so I want to tell you that there are geographic differences. In the responses, we've tried to push back and ask what communities you represent and what industries you work in to better understand why people are saying that they support or oppose the repeal. So specifically in the northern regions, we hear a lot about disruption in schools, a disruption in student behavior, and an issue with testing in our northern communities. In our southern communities, closest here in Juneau and the southeast communities, we hear that they want to stay the same. They like being close to Seattle. They like that consistency in time. We found a study that was recently put out in Sweden that actually shows that when we move on and off daylight savings time, that your heart attack rate that shows up in hospitals increases. And so I would just tell you that it's not because of daylight savings time, it's because of a disruption in sleep. And that can be also known, and I'm probably going to get it wrong, so a doctor can correct me, but circadian rhythm is off, and you can sometimes experience it with jet lag, is what you feel. And so in our northern communities, they are typically off of their sun time by 3 hours most of the year. And we ask them to function like everyone else who is closer to the equator on that same time. And they just, you just function differently. And hopefully we'll have a doctor or two testify today. If not, they certainly have provided us email on that. Some other concerns that we heard was safety issues, and that can go safety and recreational. The kids that are going to school in the summer that are thrown into immediate darkness because we go off of daylight savings time in the fall, so safety can be on either end, but we had teachers that wrote in and said that it would be nice to be lighter in the morning so that the kids going back and forth the buses would be safer. The biggest issue that I found personally that resonates with me for a reason not to repeal is our business and their desire to be able to communicate on a regular basis with the East Coast or with vendors across the world. And we're pushing back on that just a little bit. And the pushback that we will be going out and reaching out again to our community is, if you start work at 8 o'clock, which I know that the finance industry doesn't do that, but if you start work at 8 o'clock, you're already challenged with 3 hours of available time to communicate with the East Coast. And for those that wrote in support of the repeal, they believe that with technology that exists today that was different than in 1983, that businesses still can be successful in communicating with their vendors across the world. Crystal and I just found this morning, I give credit to Crystal specifically, she found a chart that showed the progression of daylight savings time across the world. We couldn't get it to print for you this morning in color because you need to see it in color. But what it shows is the countries that are closest to the equator, many of them have never went on daylight savings time, and the northern hemisphere has used daylight savings time as an option. And what you see now coming from the east and across to the west is a migration to repeal and get off of daylight savings time. And so it's sweeping in the lower part of Asia now coming up through. I'm checking with Crystal to make sure I've got it right. It's sweeping up through and starting to change. So we'll send you the link so that you can see that the world is starting to see that there might be something, some reason why we shouldn't do that. But the biggest issue of all for our office in the repeal is that people, we believe, like to be consistent, that it's not necessarily on or off daylight savings time, but they like the certainty of if you're calling your grandma or your mom or your dad or your aunt or your uncle, whether they're in Kansas, Texas, or Florida, they like that consistency issue. And so we're going to push back again to see if that's a true belief in challenging that. But with all that said, we have overwhelming support from the community. We have some businesses that have come out in opposition. Most of those businesses are in Southeast that we've seen close connected to the West Coast. And I would comment as a closing remark that for those who are concerned with our communication in the financial world, that one of our major bank presidents is in support of the repeal. So he doesn't think that there's changes, and he's been in our state for, I would guess, over 50 years. So I would just leave that there are differences of opinion in the finance and business community, too.
Okay. Representative Sisna.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question comes from the description of the history. And the history, as it was explained, was that the reason for going to daylight savings time had to do with the conserving energy fuel, that was the reason, and on it through time, it was because of crises in fuel that actually put it in place over and over again. It was taken away when there wasn't a crisis in fuel, put back again, and I'm constantly being hit by the fact that we're really not in touch here in this state with what the lower states are going through in terms of a market crash. And what we are in touch with, but we don't link it to things that maybe we ought to, and that is the enormous cost of fuel, which many communities are still living with that through this winter. And what outcomes there might be even on the distributorship because of the different fuel vendors that appear to be taking a real hit because of the very high prices and then the crash, and they're trying to figure out how they pay for this big, very expensive oil that got. So the issue of what this was always for, and I'm right in the middle on this. I don't really care one way or the other. But your whole description of this based on energy means that the study that you're doing on this, I think, needs to include, for instance, in those very communities that are 3 hours off, there may in fact be a benefit here for them. Because if you're working in an office, then if you're working in an office at night when it's dark and you get to have your spare time when you're going outside and working on or doing a little bit of hunting or digging or whatever, that actually wouldn't be so bad. So the energy part of this, I think, is real important. And is that part of what you're doing?
Through the chair, Representative Cisna, there's actually studies nationally that are going on now that daylight savings time actually costs more money. Nationally, and I'll speak to Alaska in just a moment, but nationally, we have a study, and I believe it's been provided to you, that shows that because people are starting, so we're moving down towards the equator now, so they're turning on their air conditioners more and actually expending more fuel, and there's one study to support that. Kentucky? Is that
Indiana.
There's a study in your packet that shows that. Specific to Alaska, you change within a week. So there might be something minor on the energy side of life to do, but typically those that you're speaking to in our northern communities are the ones that dislike daylight savings time overwhelmingly as a majority, more than anyone else in our state. So, Crystal, did you have some follow-up that you were...
Through the chair, Representative Cisna, in your packet, there is a news article by National Geographic, and following up in the back of that is the actual study. And it talks about in Indiana, only 15 of Indiana's 92 counties had made the counties. Thank you. Had made the switch to daylight saving time. And in the spring of 2006, when the entire state implemented daylight saving time, the switch to daylight savings time increased Indiana homeowners and almost $7 million in residential electricity bills, mainly because of heating and air conditioning use through those. But they had, you know, it was good to see that some of the counties used it and some of them didn't, so they were able to, you know, to have that comparison.
You have a follow-up?
Just quickly, in this particular rural Alaska and Indiana, very different in so many different ways in how they're going to do things. I think we really need to look at those communities, and there's people that could probably here in the state be adding that to their, you know, what they're doing.
Representative Keller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Am I understanding right, Representative Fairclough, that in 1983, when we went on Alaska time, that was a federal act, not a state act. We don't have the option, right, of forming our own time zone.
Representative Keller, through the chair, Representative Keller, no, as I understand that was an Alaska issue, that we had to clear it through the federal government. That's how I understand it, that Alaska did that.
I follow up?
Yes.
I was under the impression, I may be wrong, and I'm trying to learn this, but I was under the, by the way, I know Mr. Willis too, and I really support, you know, something that makes more sense in Alaska. I don't know what it is at this point. But my follow-up is that my understanding is that the only choice that we have in state law is to go on or off daylight savings time, not to get creative and like go 3 hours from Washington, D.C. you know, and go off daylight savings time. So we have, you know, that's the way I understood it, and I'd like to be corrected. I'd be very delighted to be corrected on that. So,
for the record, Representative Harris has joined us. Is that it?
Yeah.
Follow up.
If you don't have a response, the other question I have is there's two kinds of consistency, and I'm just again clarifying here. You got consistency with our neighbors here in Alaska, and we got consistency with the East Coast. And so what I want to get clear in my head is what we can do about both. And I wonder, you know, if we just go off daylight savings time, that creates consistency with our neighbors, but it doesn't do anything for us. In fact, it confuses the issue of consistency with what's going on in Lower 48. Or yeah, some would argue that it confuses it because of the fact that we wouldn't change and they would, and then we'd have to figure out, you know, what time of the year that they're 3 hours off and what time of the year they're 4 hours off on the East Coast. So, anyway.
Yes, ma'am.
Through the chair, Representative Keller, I totally agree with everything you said. We'll follow up to see if it was a federal decision, and we could have it wrong. We're certainly seeking information at this point to clearly understand, and I think that everything that you just stated is what we are trying to do. Right. The reason that you have a resolution before you following this one is because just what you said about the consistency issue, if we can't, it would be optimum for Alaska to have everyone cease to use Alaska Daylight Savings, or I'm sorry, with Daylight Savings Time, and then Alaska to look at our time zone issue, because truly the northern communities are geographically the ones that are responding with heart felt thanks for bringing this forward. And then as we get closer and we start moving to the interior and then into South Central, we get more of a mix where people just want us out of their lives politically for time reasons, but less because of the light day issue, considering that it all washes out in about 10 days.
Thank you.
Okay. Representative Munoz.
Thank you. It's a follow-up to Representative Keller's question. The net impact then on the citizens of the state, could you explain to me how the time change with Alaska participating and not the rest of the country, what the net change would be and how, you know, in terms of the number of months, how many months would we be 4 hours different and how, and 3 hours? I mean, I'm a little confused on what the actual net impact would be on us here in this state.
We're trying to do the math for you through the chair. When we go on daylight savings time in the spring of a year, for 7 months, we would be 3 hours off if we repealed daylight savings time. And when we went off of daylight savings time, we would be, for 5 months, 4 hours different. And that goes to what Representative Keller was saying in the consistency issue and what I said earlier about, so we've heard from 364 people and 264 say they support the repeal. What we want to do is push back to them and say, do you support the repeal? Because if the rest of the nation still goes on and off. And so now, like prior to 1983, and many of us were here in 1983, I had to remember whether I was going to be 2 hours off of Seattle or 1 hour off of Seattle from Anchorage, and whether I was 5 hours off of the East Coast or 4 hours off of the East Coast. So so it does get confusing. That's exactly the point, that it's confusing, and that's why I said the largest issue for our office that remains constant is the consistency issue with the rest of the nation, because there is more than brothers just in Alaska. There are brethren in the rest of our nation, and then there are brethren across the world that we communicate with. And so for those that communicate across the world, they're already used to dealing with the time zones. But inside of our own nation, the businesses raise a good point in that there will be inconsistency, not insurmountable, but inconsistency. Okay. Mr. Chairman, there are two states that currently don't do that. Hawaii and Arizona do not rotate on and off. So if you have business with those two particular states already, you are having to make some concessions with how you do business with those states in considering that.
Representative Cisna.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And my question is on the survey that you did Was that by any chance, and it's asking, it sounds unfair, but I think it is important. Was that a random sample, or was that self-selecting responses?
Through the chair, Representative Sisno, we did a press release, and then we pushed out our email into different communities, and we spoke in media outlets to ask people to just respond. So it was totally random. That's why we were trying to log individual communities so that we can see if there are geographic differences with this issue. And from our anecdotal random responses, we are seeing big differences in depending on the latitude of where you live.
Right. And one of the and thank you, Mr. Speaker. One of the problems with sometimes how we get those responses are those people are the ones that they're not a cross section, and they are a selective group just in the way that they are. It unfortunately the same thing happens at the meetings that we go to, but it would be so great to be able to figure out kind of more of a random sample, at least of the community that would really truly be affected either by energy or by work to this.
Mr. Chairman, through the...
Go ahead.
Representative Sisna, there has been two surveys done that were not random. All of them support a repeal of daylight savings time. In 2005, Helenthal did a survey, and it's in your packet too. 49% of people favored repeal in Alaska of daylight savings time, 36.6 opposed, and 12.5 didn't know. In 2004, Dittman did a survey, 58% favored the repeal. 70% of those were rural communities that were asked. 37% opposed daylight savings time. Alaska has overwhelmingly, every time they were asked, statistically or not, said they supported repeal of daylight savings time.
Okay. I guess, Representative Faircoff, if we could go back to your comment about other states, Arizona and Hawaii. And so, you know, I've traveled to Laughlin, Nevada, and, you know, have friends in Bullhead City across the river. So, I mean, I know how that works year-round in that community. Are there other states that are close to making a similar change like that's proposed here?
Mr. Chairman, we've done an analysis through, I believe, NCSL. Has been tracking different states taking up the issue, but none were exactly the same, which is why I didn't quote it or provide that particular information. But there are about 6 to 10 states that continually are asking questions about daylight savings time where their communities are struggling with the question. Most of it comes back to asking Congress and the Department of Transportation to do a study. And so they continue to try to answer Representative Sisna's question, is energy really positive or negatively affected? And how much money will we spend on finding the answer to that question out? But again, now we have a study from Indiana that is saying that there was a 1% increase in that latitude. And Representative Sisna rightly points out that that's not Alaska. But if you are needing to operate an air conditioner like Texas or Florida or other ways to cool or heat, anecdotally it would seem that if we can prove it out in Indiana, that it probably can be proved out that if you're accessing those types of cooling systems that your energy costs may be higher.
Okay. Representative Harris, just for information, this room is on daylight savings time. We moved the clock ahead just so we could
appreciate that.
Appropriately deal with it. Okay, if there are no other questions, we do have one person that wishes to testify on this.
And so, it's really late, Mr. Chairman, but I just want to point that in.
We wanted to highlight that point with daylight savings time. But at this time, we will go to the teleconference. We have Lynn Willis from Eagle River. Sir, you have provided written testimony. It is very detailed and thorough. If you could... please summarize your testimony for us this morning.
Good morning. Can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead, sir.
My name is Lynn Willis. I reside in Eagle River, and I'd like to thank you for holding a hearing on this issue, which directly impacts on every Alaskan resident twice each year. I support passage of HB 19. I've been interested in repealing Alaskan daylight saving time for several years. I have no financial motive to support House Bill 19, and I represent myself. I simply resent being subjected to such an invasive law that seems to have no compelling reason for its continued use. I maintain a website relating to Alaskan DSD and was involved in the effort to put this issue before the voters by initiative. Yesterday, as you mentioned, I submitted a statement of testimony to Representative Heron's office. Today, I will focus on three of the 15 reasons taken from my website for ending the use of DST in Alaska. First, I will address the argument claiming we need DST to sustain business in Alaska. Please accept the fact that we no longer live in an Alaska where business communications is limited to using hardwired desk telephones accessible only during business hours. Advances in communication technology since 1967, when we started using DST in Alaska, communication technology now allows contact for business purposes 24/7. The purported advantage of never being more than 1 hour behind Seattle or 4 hours behind New York may not exist for all businesses. Alaska now has business relations with the Pacific Far East where DST is not used, specifically China and Japan. To illustrate, please consider the impact of DST on an air cargo operation. In Anchorage, this Saturday, March 7th, a scheduled flight originating in Japan, where DST is not observed, will arrive in Anchorage at 12 noon. However, the next day, Sunday, March 8th, after we spring forward, and we do go to daylight saving time this Sunday morning at 2 o'clock, that same flight will arrive in Anchorage 1 hour later at 1 p.m. Since this flight must leave Anchorage for the lower 48 at the same local time on Sunday that it left on Saturday, valuable ground time in Anchorage for maintenance and cargo sorting will be shortened by 1 hour. Regarding small business impact, one of the initiative petition supporters was a fireworks dealer. I can appreciate that an Alaskan fireworks dealer wouldn't want the time of sunset delayed. Secondly, energy savings is the official reason the federal government allows individual states to use daylight saving time. The people I spoke to from local energy utilities in Anchorage told me that it is the length of the day combined with ambient temperature that affect energy usage in the Rail Belt region, not instantly changing the time of sunrise and sunset. Nationwide energy grids do show a reduction in consumption when DST is in use. However, regional variances are not uniform. Arizona opted out of DST because of the increased need for air conditioning when time of sunset is delayed during summer months, and that apparently is also being found in Indiana. Alaska is not on any national energy grid and cannot benefit from large power grid energy savings attributed to the use of DST. Lastly, I'd like to reiterate, the polling data that is available shows that, for those that had an opinion, 58%, according to Dittman, of 505 Alaskans surveyed, 58% want to keep the clocks the same all year, 37% favored changing clocks as we do now. Helenthal's sample was 323. He did this in 2005. Again, 49.9% wanted to do away with DST. 36.6% wanted to keep it. Of those Alaskans voicing a preference, the majority want to end the use of daylight saving time. I urge you to vote for this bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Willis. We have a question. Representative Keller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Not so much a question, just a comment that I appreciate you sticking with this issue, Lynn, and it looks like you got good traction here with Representative Faircloth, and I thank you. It's an important issue to me, and I hope we can find a resolve that makes consistency all around, and that's my goal. But just thanks for hanging in there. You've been on this issue for a long time. I think I worked with you for 5 years on it.
Yes, you did, and I might point out that your question about the federal time zone, the Department of Transportation creates time zones. That is a federal responsibility. The 1983 time zone in Alaska that merged three of the four former time zones was done by the Department of Transportation.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Keller. Mr. Willis, I appreciate your written testimony. I wish it was all written testimony was this concise, and we have another comment or question, Representative Cisna.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Willis, my question to you is, you were mentioning both the Dittman and the Helenthal surveys, both of those, and You did mention on the Dittman poll that there was a percentage that had an opinion. What was the percentage of people who didn't have an opinion? Do you know on that one?
Yes. The total report for that poll was, the question he asked was, do you want to keep clocks the same all year, or do you want to change your clocks? The inference being, if you want to keep the clocks the same all year, we're not going to use daylight saving time. If you do want to switch clocks, we are going to use it. The unsure category in that poll was 5%. And again, 37% wanted to use DST. They wanted to switch clocks. And 58% wanted to keep it the same the all year.
Okay.
And this poll is on my website if you'd like to go look at it, both that and the Hillenthal poll.
Great. And your website address?
It's www.endalaskadst.com. It's also mentioned in the notes that I gave to Representative Heron.
Great. Thank you.
Okay. Is there other questions of Mr. Willis? If not, thank you, sir. We will move on to further discussion on House Bill 19. Is there any other questions from committee members? Okay. We will just hold this for a second, and we'll ask the sponsor of HDR 20, Representative Claire Clough, to address that issue as well.
Mr. Chairman, you've been talking about all of the different nodes of that can be turned on or off, federal daylight savings time, consistency in the issues. But truly, Congress and the Department of Transportation should take up the issue and repeal daylight savings time. There are multiple states that have been trying to have this happen for years. We are trying to raise that, and that's why you have a resolution before you, so that we can raise it with our senators, both sides of the aisle in Congress. We believe that we can gather support from other states around the nation, and would ask for your favorable consideration. The resolution highlights the concerns that we've talked about this morning.
Okay, Representative Faircloth, I mean, to the resolution, of course, House Bill 19 talks about exempting ourselves. This is encouraging Congress to end the daylight saving. I mean, is there other states, is it a concern of theirs, or are they, I mean, I guess I need have you just sort of touch on that a bit.
Mr. Chairman, from the NSBRC.
No, NCSL.
NCSL. I'm sorry, there's too many acronyms. I serve on another in. NCSL has multiple states, somewhere in the neighborhood, and I'm just going from memory, 5 to 10 states that have taken this issue up in the last 4 years that are looking at some kind of change. My crystal is passing that Florida and California have been looking at it most recently and are actively pursuing it. I'm asking the legislature to consider asking our congressional delegation to speak with Department of Transportation to end it, and I believe that we can rally support in the next 2 years nationally to take a look at the issue. Representative Cisna rightly points out that political time may save us energy, and it may not. And there is now technology out there and able to track much differently than in World War I or World War II to see the actual costs of how it affects communities from an energy standpoint. But more specifically, we are starting to see doctors engage in this conversation about depression, about different things in your body being synchronized and on a normal, natural time versus a political time that is trying to tell you when you're supposed to wake up and be alert and ready to go. And the bottom line is, we are further out of sync in our northern communities than anywhere else in the world.
Is there a, yes? Any other questions on the resolution before we return to 19? No other questions on the 19. What is the wishes of the committee on HDR 20?
HDR 20 or the 19?
HDR 20, before we return to 19.
Oh.
What are the wishes of the committee on the resolution HDR 20?
Mr. Chairman, I move that we move for committee HDR 20 / R, the
yes.
R version.
Object.
Individual recommendations.
Objection is to the objection?
To the objection, and it's my objection, I actually didn't know the history of the of daylight savings time, and prior to that, I was 50-50 either way. I mean, it just simply didn't, it doesn't matter to me personally. We just are in this state in a winter. We're right in the middle of it right now, past the worst part of it, but people are running out of money. And so getting ready for next summer and getting enough food and money for fuel for next year is something that we've still got ahead of us, and they've got ahead of them. I would want to proceed with care on anything that might possibly, and this might not have any effect. It's really very true. This might not have a bit of effect and maybe something positive. But I think this is drastic enough, what's happening right now, that we proceed with care, and that that yes, there are doctors that may have found a link, but there's doctors that have found a link to just all kinds of different things on human health. And the same thing is true on savings of fuel and energy. And what you want is you want to have a pretty solid balance of information before you move ahead on this, I'd say. And that is me thinking right now, because it's brand new, the understanding about what it was developed for at the very beginning. And they didn't even know what energy trouble were, or what it was at that point. And we're really seeing it right now. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Representative Harris.
The reason I made the motion is I noticed that this has another committee of referral, the Labor and Commerce Committee. I think it's my position that that we give this resolution the ability to be heard in another committee, and maybe the good representative to my left would be able to go to that committee and listen to the arguments as well, but it'll give another committee the opportunity to hear it out and talk about it. So,
thank you, Representative Harris. Representative Sisson.
Thank you. And in response, Mr. Chair, to Representative Harris, our committees are formed for very good reasons, and they're formed, and we don't have one committee of referral because every or any one of our bills might affect numerous things in state government, finances for sure. But then in this committee, and it's really a wonderful committee, I think, because we really look at our people and how it affects our people in all the different communities across the state. And I think that's the job of this one. I'm interested in finances too. I think that's extraordinarily important, but not any more important than the people who actually send us here. And those people, I want to make sure this works for them. It's irritating as heck moving your clock, especially not when you're gaining an hour, but when you're losing an hour. And I can see why there would be heart problems at that point. But at the same time, I'd love to know more about why in the world people thought it was going to save. And I haven't done that study. I haven't read what you've read. I'd like to know more about that. And I think the legislature itself needs to do that. This committee is going to worry about the people.
Representative Zisna. Yes, Representative Munoz.
Thank you. On the question of energy, though, isn't it true that in the fall, when you lose an hour and you have to light your house longer and use more energy because of that loss of the hour, wouldn't that in and of itself have a negative impact on energy costs? That it seems pretty logical to me. I don't know if you could comment on that.
Yes, ma'am.
Mr. Chairman, that's what it seems like to me. Again, I would note, and Representative Sisna doesn't have the 264 emails that I've reviewed, each and every one, to look for an individual issue that they might have that's different that we haven't recorded. But our northern communities that are of most concern for energy consumption are the ones that are asking for the repeal more than any other region or area. So I will be happy to take those concerns to those communities. We've told all the people that responded that we were saving their emails so that we could communicate with them again on this issue. And we will ask the question, the energy question back.
What I would suggest is, Representative Cisna, is that we have two pieces of legislation. I would encourage you to remove your objection on HGR 20 so it can go on to the next committee, and that I will ask you to work with Representative Faircloth on HB 19, because HB 19 is a state issue with our laws, and 20 is asking Congress. We will work, and the sponsor will work with our delegation on 20, so I'd ask you to remove so we can move 20 on, and then we can hold 19 to discuss in committee.
Thank you, and I will do that. I will remove my objection on this.
Okay, if there's no other questions or comments on HGR 20, Madam Co-Chair. If there's no objection, I'm sorry. Representative has moved the bill, and so we will... 20 will move on to the next committee referral. Now let's return to House Bill 19. I had just one question. We, Representative Faircloth, we have written testimony from Rangel opposing it, yet we have, I don't have anything in front of me, but we have other Southeast communities that support it. So in your research, what is it 50-50, or is it... is Rangel Public Schools an anomaly?
Mr. Chairman, I don't think I want to speak to that. Southeast has been overall the most energetic in wanting to keep everything the same. But as far as school districts go, I think I just provided you. Rangel came in yesterday, so we wanted to make sure you had the opposition so that you were fully informed as we were. But if you noticed, then Anchorage was in saying that they support the repeal or giving reasons why they thought their school district would be better suited to not be shifting on and off daylight savings time. So we've given you what you want. Seward is a real interesting city that's commenting. Somehow, however, that email chain got going there. We had multiple responses from Seward, most of them in favor of the repeal. And then when you get to a Chamber of Commerce, it gets interesting. And they hold up because they have personal opinions, but then they haven't really talked to their membership. And so it seems to be even split among Chamber of Commerce's. The Eagle River Chamber of Commerce has come out with a resolution endorsing the repeal. And I'm not sure if we've gotten one in opposition, but we expected the chambers to be to have the biggest concerns because of the business aspect that's been brought up before.
Okay, anything else? It is the intent of co-chairs to hold House Bill 19 so that Representative Cisna and Representative Faircloth can get together, and we would like to schedule this for a meeting in the near future so it can move on to House Labor and Commerce. So we will close that on 19. Yes. Yes, sir. Yes,
Mr. Ma'am. Chairman, for clarity, for Representative Cisna, is it specifically the oil issue and energy? So if we reach out to those communities and try to find out oil consumption and energy costs, is that what the additional northern information that we want?
Representative Cisna.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I personally am concerned about the fact that we really need some scientific, some kind of solid information, not anecdotal and emotional feelings to this. But at this particular time, I think if in fact everyone is in favor of it that got an email, those who have email in remote places are a select group of people. It would be something probably more trying to dig into the people who are dealing with the costs themselves and really do a systematic survey of that cost so that it's something that is verifiable.
Mr. Chairman, if I might, we don't have the resources inside my office to authorize a scientific study of oil and gas. We can, and we did, reach out not in just a general email, but to government agencies and to community councils and local tribal and regions to ask for information back. So while it was random in that it went out and we can't verify who finally got the issues, but we reached out into school districts and community centers throughout our state. So I certainly agree that it's anecdotal and you can't do that, but I'm trying to figure out a way that through our office we can answer that need. And I can work offline, but I just, our resources as a staff is very limited in our ability to take on a scientific study like Indiana did to prove out a 1% increase.
Yes, please go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I certainly understand too well, exactly how hard it is. At the very same time, the Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development that we actually do a lot of their stuff here, have some resources that may possibly fit this, and I think it would be, is there anybody from the department that's either online or in the room that maybe could even speak to whether or not there might be a way in the department itself to, because they're dealing all the time with, so is another department is the Homeland Security people. The Homeland Security people have been monitoring the fuel costs very closely because of the real danger that is affecting this year. So there may be right here going on right now stuff like this happening, and it'd be great to tie into it.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair.
Thank you. I think it's important to recognize that there is an additional committee of referral on this bill, and that it's appropriate, we believe, to move the bill in the near future. So I would think that if the two of you could get together and have a discussion, and perhaps Representative Fairclough could share some of the information that she has with you in that meeting, I think that would be quite effective. But to expect a scientific study, I really don't think that is in the realm of the possible, as has been mentioned. But certainly we want to recognize your concerns and give you an opportunity to meet with the representative.
Yes, ma'am, go ahead.
Thank you very much, Ms. Co-Chair, I guess we could say that. I certainly would appreciate doing that. This is not, this actually, changing things might be not important. It might be very important, and I'd love to do that. I'm not really talking about, I come from a world where I was self-employed for 28 years. Scientific research was where I tapped into information that already existed, and I can't imagine that there isn't a way to figure out easily whether or not that's possible, and I'd love to try to do that.
Okay. Yes, Representative Fairclough.
Mr. Chairman, we're happy to reach out to AEA and the departments that Representative Cisna has mentioned to see if there's any way we can quantify those costs.
Good. Depending on the workload, it would be the co-chair's intent to schedule this for March 12th, Thursday, March 12th, and we'll possibly have further debate, depending on our workload, further debate on March 12th. So with that, we will conclude our... Oh, yes, ma'am.
Mr. Chairman, will the public testimony still be open? Because there was a doctor that I wanted to testify. I didn't reach out to them today. I wasn't sure how many people would be here. But there are several people that I highlighted on the email coming through that had some really good arguments, per se, in support or in opposition that I'd like to call and at least give them the opportunity to share those pros and cons to the committee.
Mm-hmm. Yes, the co-chairs will work with you, and it would be invited testimony only.
Thank you.
Thank you. We have concluded our discussion on the bill. Let's move on to the last one. And, Chris, for the record, we are off daylight savings time. It is 9:04 in the committee room.
9:04.
We're off daylight savings time.
Is that the right time?
No, that's daylight savings time on the clock. So.
Is that the right time?
9:04. Cool.
Yes, we are at 9:04, and we are on to House Bill 153. To the committee members, we do have a sponsor statement. This bill was by request from the North Star, let me get my notes here. Fairbanks North Star Borough. And the committee does have that opening statement, but we do have a couple of people online that can make an opening statement. Renee Broker, are you online?
Yes, I'm here.
Please state your name and your affiliation, and please begin your testimony.
Okay. My name is Renee Broker, and I'm the borough attorney at the Fairbanks North Star Borough. And on behalf of the Fairbanks North Star Borough, I speak today in support of HB 153 because it fixes two what we believe are unintended consequences of the Open Meetings Act, and it performs those fixes without affecting the fundamental goals and intent of the act, because we here have absolutely no desire to undermine the public's right to know about what its government is doing and to participate in important policy decisions that its government is making. And we don't believe that either one of these proposed changes affects that very important right. Lines 12 to 14, really all it does is add a very narrow exception. It's limited only to municipal boards and only when those boards are meeting solely to make administrative or managerial decisions. This works really from a distinction between governmental functions that already exist in the Act. And I say that because the Open Meetings Act today already recognizes that one cannot effectively perform day-to-day administrative functions and still comply with the Act. It does that by exempting municipal employees. And you can see that language up there. It's in line 3 and 4. That's existing language where it says, hey, if you work for a public entity, if you're a public employee, the Act doesn't apply to you. So this new language simply extends that very narrow existing exemption to the situation where those same exact administrative functions are instead being performed by volunteer boards or commissions rather than municipal employees. I think the best example of that is if you were in a borough or a city that had a public works department that ran and, you know, was in charge of your roads, then, you know, that department would receive funding from the assembly and then would be given a budget, and then municipal employees would then start making the decisions without holding public meetings about what potholes to fix, which intersections needed brushing for visibility, those sort of day-to-day administrative decisions. In second-class boroughs that don't have those road powers, they don't have public work departments. So instead, we have road service areas. And once they receive their budget from the assembly, they are making those exact decisions, but they're subject to the Open Meetings Act. So lines 12 to 14 are simply trying to address that problem that creates and say, really, when they're just performing functions that municipal employees would otherwise be performing, they should receive that same exemption. The change reflected in line 23-24 deals with a different practical problem, and that is the fact that there is this sort of curious anomaly that exists in the Act today where there's two completely different definitions of what constitutes a meeting. The first is in A, it's the existing language above the new language in B, and that applies to policymaking bodies like the assembly, like city councils, you know, people who are actually making decisions that bind the municipality. That definition has a numerical standard, you know, that we're probably all very familiar with. But for some odd reason, the definition as it exists in B that applies only to advisory bodies who cannot bind the municipality, only make recommendations, that definition lacks a numerical standard. So if you're sitting a member of the assembly, you can call up another assembly member and say, hey, let's meet, you know, for coffee and discuss, you know, issue A. But if you're on an advisory board, you can't do that because the rule of three or more doesn't apply to you. It's just you can't have a prearranged meeting. So in sort of that odd way, the definition of a meeting, advisory bodies are subject to a more stringent standard than policymaking bodies. And we don't believe that was intended. It's counterintuitive. It just it is odd. I have the pleasure of trying to, you know, train our advisory boards, and a lot of them also have served or are serving on governing bodies. And when you explain to them that they actually have to live under a more stringent standard, or explain to somebody who's just trying to volunteer that they can't, you know, arrange to meet, you know, another board member, and even though there's 25 board members to discuss an issue, I mean, it's just the look on their face is like, are you kidding me? You know, that just makes no sense. And we don't think it does. We don't think it was intended. So these two fixes, in our opinion, actually strengthen the Act. They don't undermine it, because it makes it more practical, it makes it more workable, it makes it reflect the practical realities that people have to, you know, provide services to their community. They're doing their best, and they need a system that works. And that concludes my remarks, and I'm available for questions.
Are there questions from committee members on this?
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Harris.
Ma'am, what did you say your name was again?
Renee Broker.
Renee, thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. as a former mayor and a member of local city council for a long period of time, I fully understand what you're going through. My question to you is, I don't see any backup here from the Alaska Municipal League. I don't see anything from any other municipalities or government entities in the state. Do you have any of that, or is this strictly a Fairbanks North Star Borough and my good friend Jim Whitaker's problem, or do you have support from others as well?
Well, it's currently being considered by the Alaska Municipal League. They haven't acted on it yet. And I can say, as an active member of the Municipal Attorneys Association and a former president in that organization, I've had a lot of contact with my counterparts throughout the state, specifically in Mat-Su and Kenai, and I know that they have the same exact problems we have.
Yeah, we had it in Valdez, too. And Cordova, if you remember a number of years ago, Cordova probably had the worst case in the state. The sad part about it is, from all indications that I have, is that the only penalty to violating the Open Meeting Act is to go back and redo it in an open meeting. And Cordova, as you remember, almost bankrupt the community in a lawsuit that they could have just done it in an open meeting and been done. But anyway, I'm fully in favor of this. I think it's the right thing to do. Certainly don't want to violate the spirit of the Open Meetings Act. We want our governmental decisions to be done out in the open, in an open and transparent manner. But sometimes people tend to talk to each other, and they want to discuss things before they get to a meeting or whatever. And as long as they don't, again, violate the numbers provision of the Open Meetings Act, and that, I think that, you know, it's still a free society. People ought to be able to talk to each other. So I appreciate you bringing this forward. Thank you.
Representative Sisna, then Representative Keller.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. And I didn't understand what this was about until, or I can't say I understand what this is about, but I didn't actually have it come before me until yesterday. And in hearing about it yesterday, I'm not an attorney. I've served on numerous advisory boards and committees and commissions, but at the very same time, the language of this, to me, I need to understand it better. And I also had noted that my own community, Anchorage, isn't apparent. They might be online, and if they're online, that would be great. But I need to hear from other communities, because we're talking the state here, not one community. And I think it's really important to see how, in different settings, it would work. I can really understand that in a commission or any of those things, it's not reasonable to have them have to rise to a higher standard than you are with larger, more important groups of dignitaries, but at the same time, the idea that we're talking about administration when you're talking about boards and commissions, I'm wondering, I thought that boards and commissions were not, they were not administrative in function. And so kind of giving freedom that is administrative in function, that's what this sounds like to me. I'd love to know if boards and commissions is a word of art, and if it is, what exactly it defines, and exactly how this really addresses that in the way that it was explained to me. And is there anyone that can answer that?
Okay. I guess I'll let's defer that for the moment and keep that question in mind. And Representative Keller, please go ahead.
Can I ask what the intent, is there a hope or a desire to move this bill today?
I think that after we have one other person that signed up to testify, I'll ask if they want to add to Renee's comments, and then I have some concerns that I'd like to address, and then we'll consider moving it out of committee later in the meeting.
Yeah, I guess the question I have, it would be Renee, as an attorney, is what is the definition, a legal definition of administrative or managerial? Thank you.
It really is, if you think about it, I guess maybe if I put it in the state context, you know, there's legislative, which is, you know, the legislative body, and then there's, you know, which is our assembly or city council, and then the mayor really is in charge of the administrative function of the borough. So the mayor and employees, or what the governor and her employees would perform, those are administrative managerial functions. So that's why I drew the analogy between, you know, the current exemption for municipal and state employees, because those are the people who normally perform administrative managerial functions. That we just have it in, and the previous speaker is correct, it's very unusual. It's not commonplace that most boards and commissions perform administrative managerial functions. Here in our borough, and in most boroughs as I understand it, that really is limited to road service areas and fire service areas, because that is where, in, you know, in small neighborhoods, people are, you know, form commissions to perform a function, just one function, and they pick up, you know, a variety of duties, but one of them is to actually supervise the affairs of that road commission or fire commission. Most boards and commissions don't do that. They just make recommendations to the assembly or to the mayor. But there are those limited areas where people do actually perform functions that, if that same function was performed borough-wide or city-wide, would be done by municipal employees.
Okay. Yes. Luke Hopkins, did you wish to testify?
Yes, thank you. My name is Luke Hopkins. I sit on the Fairbanks North Star Borough Assembly, and I'm also a board member for the Alaska Municipal League. I do want to speak to, of course, in favor of these two changes to the Open Meetings Act. They're reasonable changes, where we're asking for service area commissioners to perform their duties for the citizens and the taxpayers that are paying into these small service area funds in our community. And the commissioners need to ensure that the basic actions that these, that the taxpayers are paying for, are administratively taken care of, as we heard, whether it's snow removal or work on summer activities to improve road surfaces. And it's clear that it's just asking for these administrative duties, managerial duties, to have a couple of commissioners be able to meet and talk about this on the corner of a road, somebody's driveway, in discussing a culvert situation. In the other section, in on line 23 and 24, it's just to provide the same standards for what a meeting what constitutes a meeting for volunteer commissioners to have the same standards that we do for the policymaking body. I, as an assembly member, hear from these volunteer commissioners, why the heck can't two commissioners for road service areas stop and talk about the conditions on the road and whether we need to do something about it, while the assembly members, even three of us, can sit and talk. When it's the fourth one, you're out of the limits of the Open Meetings Act. All that we're asking for is this correction, so that we're all held to the same standard. In response to Representative Harris on the question about the Municipal League supporting this, we have a resolution before the board. In our January board meeting, we considered it. We postponed it to our next board meeting so that we could have some more discussion. And that board meeting is going to be in April. I did speak to members of the Alaska Municipal League board, and the representative from the Anchorage Assembly was in favor of this. The communities in Southeast, almost all were in favor of it. The one person that had a question about it just wanted to know more about it because they were attending the board meeting on very short notice and wasn't able to read all the background information that I was bringing forward with a resolution for the Alaska Municipal League to consider. So we're kind of in a slight time warp with being able to have this resolution of support voted on, and we have to wait until our first meeting in April. So just to clarify that, but I think that it's overwhelmingly supported from the discussion that I had with other board members. So with that, I thank you for this opportunity to present testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Hopkins. Madam Co-Chair.
Thank you. I think that Section 8, Line 12, meetings of municipal boards, committees, commissions, or other similar bodies seems to be broad in that, but we're trying to get specifically at service area groups. And if the language were amended to state meetings by service area boards, committees, commissions, or other similar bodies, I think it would provide that clarity. I think the current language leaves open interpretation that could include even enterprise boards. I know in my own community here we have an airport board and a harbor board, and they do have some administrative or managerial role. They direct the manager of the airport in one instance and the manager of the harbor or harbors in the other instance. But I understand the concern that Representative Cisna is raising, but I do think that we could accomplish what the borough of Fairbanks and other boroughs are looking for by adding more specificity to the language.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I also have the same concerns. I support, in agreement with Representative Harris, I do support the intent of this legislation. But I do have some concerns. I'm a little sensitive about Open Meetings Act. When I was a city manager of Bethel, we did have litigation concerning open meetings. And to what Madam Co-Chair has addressed is that the intent of the legislation is if you have a block culvert, we don't need to notice the meeting and then decide what we're going to do with a culvert. Those service areas should be able to address that on the spot. Same with if you have a 8 inches of snow overnight, and the two people that volunteer to be on the service board, they decide what needs to be done. That I'm very supportive of. I agree with the co-chair that this language as presented is probably too broad, and what I'm concerned about is for example, a community park, a city council's park and rec committee could somehow inadvertently maybe violate the Open Meetings Act, even though there's no intent to. So I would suggest that we could work with the borough and come up with some amendments, and we'll hear this at the next meeting.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Representative Harris.
I want to add a little bit of information, I guess, about, you know, we bend over backwards or attempt to bend over backwards to regulate the law bodies, the legislature, the city councils, the borough assemblies, whatever. I got to tell you, there are more laws implemented through regulation by the administration, by municipal administrations, whatever you want to call them, which are not in any way, shape, or form governed by the Open Meetings Act. And I got to tell you, this legislature and many that I've been on in the past have really been irritated with the government, the governor and the administration, previous ones, I'm not even speaking of presidents, previous ones, when laws that we passed were then enforced by regulation, which was not in any way, shape, or form created in an open meeting environment. In fact, just the opposite, created in a very closed environment. And every day, whether it be the governor's administration, whether it be the mayor's administration in larger communities, whatever, they create more regulation and do more things in a closed environment that affect more people than we ever will, than we ever can. So, Mr. Chairman, I understand that government has to be allowed to work to work, right? But sometimes, in the spirit of trying to do things in an open and transparent environment for ourselves, we neglect to think about where much of the real decision-making is made. And we give them a carte blanche environment to just make decisions without the public's true involvement. And they happen, and then they end up affecting people, and they wonder, how in the heck did that happen? So I think people just need to understand that. All they're trying to do here, quite frankly, is they're trying to say, look, a city council with 7 members, if 3 of them get together and chat about something, don't sue them for violating the Open Meetings Act. If 4 of them get together and make a decision outside of a meeting, that's wonderful. But otherwise, give them an opportunity to talk to each other. Period. And I mean, I guess I could look at, you know, the meetings by municipal boards, committees, commissions, whatever, other similar bodies is pretty broad. Other similar bodies could be a lot of things. I think you need to be a little bit more specific here when we're talking about the law. But still, you know, I'm very sympathetic. Again, having a fair amount of experience in this field, I think it's crazy. You know, we try to regulate ourselves, the law-making body, and we neglect the law-implementing body.
Thank you. Yes, I can concur, Representative Harris, on your comments. I look forward to that amendment, but we'll clear up that part of
yeah,
it.
Yeah, right.
But... again, I'll work with the borough on specifically in Section 1, that amendment. We'll clean that up. Representative Cisna.
And thank you very much. I applaud working on this before actually moving on it. And specificity sounds like it would really clear up my concerns. I also am hopeful that we can actually get this out to other communities, so we've got multiple eyes on this, because that's kind of what the open to Representative Harris's concern. Want to make sure that we're open meeting this specific bill and hear from other communities. Thank you.
Yes, it's the intent of myself and Madam Co-Chair that we deliver a improved piece of legislation to the next committee referral, which is chaired by Representative Ramos from Fairbanks and Judiciary. So we will work with the borough and bring another, we'll bring a CS back for your consideration. Any other comments? If none, we will adjourn at 9:30 Standard Time.